The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
It's time for hour number two of the Bible Study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our guest in this hour is Pastor Kevin Parviz, pastor of the congregation Kyavi Shalom in Dogtown, and a congregation which is unique. Can we say that it's unique, Pastor Parviz?
As unique as every congregation is, I suppose, but it certainly is different from most Lutheran churches.
So if somebody from Arizona visits St. Louis, they go to a Lutheran church in Arizona, and they're visiting St. Louis, and they want to go to a Lutheran church here in St. Louis, and they wander into your congregation, are they going to be going, what in the world is going on here? Or are they going to go, oh, just exactly what I'm used to in Arizona?
Well, I suppose that without being prepped, they'd wonder what was going on, I'm sure.
Why?
But obviously we start our service after the invocation with the Shema, which is a Hebrew prayer, and our liturgies in Hebrew and English, and that would be a little bit different, I think, for most Lutheran churchgoers.
For those who are not familiar with Pastor Parviz, he was raised in a Jewish home, eventually got married and converted to Christianity, became a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod pastor, and now is pastoring the congregation Kyavi Shalom, which has a distinctly Jewish characteristic?
We're a ministry that is an outreach to the Jewish community. I would think any visitor who comes to Congregation Kyavi Shalom expecting a Lutheran church would expect a little bit different. That's not the usual name for a Lutheran church. But our ministry's primary focus, apart from worship, is also outreach, and outreach is specific to the Jewish community.
I don't know if this is a fair question or not, and I don't even know if you can sort it out enough to answer it. But you are a person raised in the Jewish church, pastoring a Christian congregation in an era in our history where Islam has suddenly become right on the forefront of debate.
Sure.
And we all know, maybe not for you, what, you raised in Colorado, is that
yes.
Right? Colorado is, a half a world away from Israel, but we all know that there are very high tensions between Israel and the surrounding Islamic world. Any of that affect you? Is that something that's on your radar screen? Are you watching what's happening in terms of Islam in a different way because of your Jewish upbringing than perhaps I might be?
Well, certainly it's hard, having grown up in a Jewish home. My perspective toward Islam, and frankly growing up it was the Arabs, is perhaps a little different because we kind of grew up with an animosity toward the Arabs because they were always attacking Israel. And of course our community and my family was always involved in planting trees in Israel and wanting to volunteer to go over there and help out during the wars and all of those kinds of things. So that gives me some kind of a skewed perspective, I think, from most. But the reality is the ministry that I am also, in addition to the congregation, Lutherans and Jewish Evangelism, our founder is very active in Muslim outreach. And he sees a very direct connection between Jewish outreach as well as Muslim outreach.
How so? I would...
It is a bridge. This whole Islam issue is a great bridge with which to have conversations with Jews. And I would think there's not a Jewish person alive who doesn't have some kind of an opinion with regard to the Islamization of the Western world and all of those kinds of issues in Israel as well. And so when you have that bridge, of course, you take advantage of it. And Bruce Liesky has written a number of things over the years with regard to Islam as well as outreach to Jewish people. And so there's a connection and a tie there as well. We have hosted former Islamic, now Christian speakers to come because they like to speak at Jewish groups as well as Christian groups.
See, and, this is what, as I said before, this is just almost beyond my ability to process. Christian or Jewish people, Islamic people who are now Christian people using bridges to reach out to communicate in what is maybe the most broken communications model in the world.
It's very rough. It really is.
Now, you've said on this program before, if I recall correctly, that there isn't a more difficult job, task, than sharing Jesus Christ and the message of the gospel with a Jewish person. Is that a, am I quoting you correctly?
I think that's a fair assessment.
So this is a story we talked about in the previous hour with Pastor Ken Wagner, because he's up in Macomb, Michigan, which is close to Detroit, not too far from Dearborn. Had a story come out of Dearborn over the weekend, and I'll read it again for your benefit and the benefit of those who have joined us. Police in the heavily Arab Detroit suburb of Dearborn say they arrested four Christian missionaries for alleged disorderly conduct at an Arab cultural festival. Police Chief Ron Haddad says his department made the arrests Friday. The four, who are now free on bond, insist they only spoke with people who wanted to speak with them. Christian proselytizing at the festival has been a matter of dispute for several years. Haddad told the Detroit Free Press he is not taking sides, but police have to keep peace at a festival that draws 300,000 people over 3 days. It's not a Jewish man, now a Christian pastor, evangelizing Jewish people. But is it pretty much the same thing as you listen to that?
I would think so. It's a common situation. I found myself in that same situation before, being threatened with arrest anyway. And certainly our ministry, another ministry that we're affiliated with recently, was threatened with arrest at the Tower Grove Gay Pride Festival a few years ago. It ended up suing the city of St. Louis and winning a judgment against them. I'm not sure about the lawsuit. I reserve comment on that. But it's a common situation in which people who, you know, in this country, we have the right to disseminate free religious literature in public. And this is clearly a public event, and those missionaries had a right to be there.
Now, are you talking about Tower Grove, or are you talking about Dearborn, Michigan?
In either place.
In either case.
If they were in a public place, they have a right to disseminate free religious literature. And certainly, I go out, and I've been rousted by the police in the University City Loop doing the same kind of thing, because they view us as a potential threat to peace. And I think that's kind of the
well, you are, aren't you?
Well, I mean, I don't. I suppose we are potentially
a threat
to peace.
Don't you think four Christians walking around with 300,000 Muslims handing out Jesus literature is kind of a threat to peace?
I'm going to guess that I can't speak for the Christians in Dearborn, but I would guess they were ethnically sensitive literature that addresses the issue of Islam and the issue of Jesus. And why I say that Jews are the hardest people to proselytize, if you want to use that phrase, is because at least in Islam, if they're talking about Jesus, Jesus is a Muslim prophet, and so it shouldn't be as much
Jesus is a Muslim.
Oh, certainly they recognize Jesus as a prophet, and he's part of their the Quran, and they can talk freely. In fact, in 1996, 97, I was sitting on a rooftop in Irvine, California, talking to a Muslim missionary, and we were sharing a Lutheran beverage and bemoaning our ministries, I suppose. And we both agreed at that point that at least Muslim missionaries can talk about Jesus. Jewish people just don't want to hear about Jesus. So, you know, I can't speak for what they were doing or what they were saying, but I affirm their right to be there, and I would think that would not be a real source of conflict among that 300,000 community there.
The story here says that on Thursday, the day before these arrests took place, a federal appeals court said that evangelist George Sage, he is not one of the four, he's a separate guy, that George could distribute information on the festival's perimeter. Is that good enough for you?
Again, it depends. For example, when we go to the Arch Fairgrounds here in St. Louis, that's federal land. It's theoretically public property. But the courts have affirmed that we may not be anywhere on the fairgrounds distributing free religious literature, that we have to be in these little bubble zones, places where we are allowed to stand and not to roam freely. And, you know, I do think that there is an inclination on the part of government to try to restrict the rights of Christians. And we walk this tightrope with challenging those laws and upholding our rights as Christians. And on the other hand, being a good witness as well and cooperating with the law. So there's this tightrope that we walk. And I would say that at least on the perimeter, they have an opportunity to talk to the people going in and out. That, for me, that would probably be enough. I know I went to the an airfare in St. Charles or in Chesterfield a few years back, and they did not. You know, that's private property, so we could only be on the perimeter. But the first thing I did was I went up to the police officers who were monitoring, and I introduced myself and told them what I was going to do, and they were very cooperative with us. You know, I think it's the stealth kind of thing mm-hmm. that sometimes concerns law officers.
So here's a hypothetical situation. Think back to when you were growing up, young man, maybe in your early 20s, associated with a synagogue in Colorado there someplace?
Yeah, by the 20s I was in Ohio in college.
But okay, well, just work with
married,
me here.
But I will. I'll work with you.
And so you decide, what was it you said the Jewish people were together and they would collect money so that you could plant a tree in Israel
sure,
and things like that?
Sure, all kinds of things.
So you get a permit to go to the city park to raise money to plant trees in Israel. And here come the Nazis. And the Nazis are going to come into the city park, and they have this literature that they want to distribute, too. Is that a problem?
Certainly, it's a conflict. You know, unfortunately, I don't know about, you know, the Nazis, but certainly the, you know, we have here, we have a National Socialist group in Dogtown that has plastered our building and defaced it and stolen our signs and things like that. You know, that kind of activity is illegal, but if they have a right as much as we do to go into that park, into a public space and offer their literature. They might argue that it's free religious literature, I don't know. But, you know, it is, I mean, certainly Skokie, Illinois had that issue in my lifetime growing up. I remember that very clearly. The Nazi Party or the National Socialists or whatever they called themselves at the time. We're going to be there during the Martin Luther King parade and rally. And the Jews were out in force. The people who were civil rights activists were out in force. And the Nazis were out in force. And it was a nightmare. But it potentially is a nightmare. That's the tightrope that you have to walk when you have the right to free speech in this country. I have a hard time believing that four Christian missionaries in Dearborn, again, I don't know the situation, were truly a threat to the 300,000 goers of this festival. Now, I'm sure this is an overreaction on the part of Dearborn police, but, you know, they also have a responsibility to maintain order and peace, and they don't know all the laws, and certainly this is the kind of thing that has to get in take of. It's been my experience that I cooperate with the police, and the police allow me to do what I need to do where I can. And
well, here's another story along this theme from Washington. Congressman Frank Wolf says the State Department refused to testify at a hearing he held last week on Morocco's expulsion of dozens of American Christians for alleged proselytizing. Wolf says the deported Americans denied trying to convert Muslims and complained that they received little or no help from the U.S. Embassy in Morocco. The State Department has been vocal, meanwhile, in defending gay rights in Africa. At a Washington gathering this month, Assistant Secretary of State Michael Posner said the State Department is firmly committed to supporting the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender individuals in Uganda and other countries. Posner said the State Department is working on a daily basis to provide a lifeline of protection when LGBT people across the world have to flee their homes or get in trouble at home. So if you're advancing lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender
You have American support.
You have American support. If you're advancing Christianity, you get expelled from Morocco, and they don't even bother to show up at the Frank Wolf hearing to explain what's going on there.
Certainly.
What's your thinking on that?
Well, number one, in Morocco, it's not the United States, so Christians do not have the same rights in Morocco that we have here. And it's probably illegal to proselytize in Morocco.
No, but it's my understanding that, I think, that the embassy in any foreign country is, you know, the American embassy is American soil, if you will.
Sure.
What American law.
So the law goes in, yeah, were they on the American embassy grounds?
Well, I mean, I think that the congressman is asking the State Department, which manages the embassy in Morocco, why is it that you're not defending Christian people when they get expelled from Morocco? Shouldn't the embassy do, now they might not win, they might not have a snowball's chance in you know where to win, but shouldn't the embassy defend these Christian people? Apparently the embassy just didn't even.
Well, of course we know that in our country, Christianity is not a protected group in the United States, and gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgenders are. I'm sure that in Africa they consider that a human rights issue rather than anything else. But, you know, the reality again is if, in fact, the people in Morocco were proselytizing against local law, it may have been legal to send them out and to evict them from the country. The embassy not weighing in at all with any comment, of course, is disturbing, but not surprising given the climate of our government.
So here I am clawing my way up this steep mountain. If 300,000 Muslims can get together for Arab Fest in Dearborn, Michigan, and be protected from the four Christians, and there are probably more than four, there were four arrests, there might have been more Christians, and they can be protected from the evangelists, if you will, moving amongst them, because then they have to be arrested. Does that seem inconsistent to you? We honor Morocco's perspective on Christians in Morocco, and apparently we honor Dearborn's Islamic perspective on Christians in Michigan.
Well, let's face it, it is politically correct now to take an Islamic worldview in our country these days, and so, you know, that's not inconsistent at all. In fact, it's disturbingly consistent, but you know,
disturbingly consistent.
Yeah, it's another example of the way in which our country has gone with regard to Islamization. And I see that it's going to be an increasing, because it's terribly incorrect to have any kind of criticism at all of anything Islam. You know, the whole situation is really kind of ludicrous right now. And it's not that I'm trying to be critical of a religious worldview, but the reality is you can't even refer to criminals who are doing something illegal in the name of Allah as being Muslim terrorists anymore. They're simply terrorists. You're not allowed at all to even issue, you know, even make a comment upon their motives.
Well, this makes you just the perfect person to put this question to, because it seems that when we've talked about this kind of a subject here on Ask the Pastor, I haven't kept track, I haven't kept records here, but it seems like the standard answer is, well, why should we be surprised that Christians are being persecuted? Why should we be surprised that they're being kicked out of Morocco for proselytizing? Why should we be surprised that they're being restrained or arrested up in Dearborn, Michigan during Arab Fest? Didn't Jesus tell us that we would experience this? Well, yes.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. My question is, are we just supposed to roll over? Are we just supposed to say, oh, well, Jesus said we would get rolled over, so let's get rolled over? Or are we supposed to push back?
Yeah, that's the tightrope I referred to.
I get the impression that you're a pusher backer every once in a while.
I think we have to. I think within, you know, as I said, the apple of his eye sued the city of St. Louis and received an $80,000 judgment against the city of St. Louis for their inability to protect the constitutional rights of the missionaries who were there. That's pushing back. You know, I'm not sure whether legal lawsuits are the issue, but I think we have to defend the gospel. And we don't just roll over. And it's okay if we get persecuted, because we're supposed to be, but we don't get persecuted for being quiet. You know, and I think we need to continue to push back and speak the gospel and affirm our rights and do what needs to be done.
Because sometimes I wonder if the people who tend to sort of make the argument that, well, yeah, why should you be surprised that Christians are being persecuted, are really saying, I'm not pushing back because I'm going to get my nose bloodied.
I don't want to get persecuted.
Right. It's bad enough as it is. So let's just lay low and wait for Jesus to change it to something else, which I don't think is a biblical approach.
Yeah, you know, it's the church militant. I think we have a strong history of the church militant. Frankly, its history has not always been very good. But we are, as a people of God, supposed to challenge. I mean, Jesus did not, when he was talking about not challenging Caesar, he was talking about not challenging his earthly authority, but still maintaining heavenly authority over even earthly conditions. And, you know, we find ways to, I think if we work at it, we can find ways to work even within a corrupt system. Clearly, that's happened for 2,000 years. The gospel moved out to the known world, even amidst a very corrupt system. And they were persecuted 2,000 years ago. We're persecuted today, not by any means the way they were. But we can't just sit back and say, we're going to stick our head in a hole and just wait for Jesus to come. I don't think he...
If you think about the Lord Jesus Christ and his activity in the gospel, or even the Apostle Paul for that matter.
Oh, sure.
Let's just stick with Jesus for a moment. It's like a world-class nose tweaker. Everywhere he went, he did things to upset the Pharisees. He did things to upset his own followers. Remember when he gave that discourse on, unless you eat my body and drink my blood, and then a whole bunch of them left? He turned over the tables in the temple, and he got all those people mad. It just seemed like his number one skill was going around making people mad.
Well, I wouldn't call it his number one skill, but certainly it was among his skill set.
Is that an example for the rest of us?
But it wasn't to make them mad. It's to challenge their worldview.
Which is going to make them mad.
And that can make people mad, and perhaps it should, because people are living in darkness and in ignorance and are destined for destruction. And if we're just going to say, well, we just don't want to ruffle feathers, just let them go to hell. What kind of perspective is that for Christians to have?
Well, it's a terrible perspective, but I think it may be the perspective that we're...
It certainly is an easy perspective
it's our,
to adopt.
M.O. right now. Yeah. Think about the Apostle Paul going to Mars Hill.
Oh, sure.
Where apparently every god that you can think of is on display there. I mean, he's going into the lion's den.
But he does it very well. And I think that's the cue. We need to do it with the covering of the Holy Spirit.
I think most
and be
of the
wise.
Folks I know would say, Paul. Don't go to Mars Hill. What are you thinking? You people up there in Dearborn, you don't go to the Arab festival. 300,000 Arabs, don't do that. What are you thinking? And then we have a scripture that says, look, you're free to do these things. But if it makes your brother stumble, don't be doing that. If going to the Arab festival or going to Tower Grove has the real potential of some people getting beaten up, some people really getting hurt or worse, we have a responsibility to stay away, don't we?
Well, number one, I understand who is your brother, but I think in that context, it's a weaker Christian. I don't think we have any responsibility not to allow 300,000 Muslims to stumble. That's our call, is to give them the stumbling stone, which is Christ, and let them stumble over it. You know, we do. I just think we have to be, as Jesus said, we have to be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. And there's a lot packed into that analogy. And in all these situations, we dare not just sit back and say, we're not going to ruffle feathers, let them all go to hell. That is not the way to do it. But you have to be wise in how we proclaim the gospel.
I don't think that the opponents of the gospel or the enemies of the gospel,
which are myriad,
are going to cut us any slack. I think if there's progress to be made, we can't wait for them to let us make it.
Well, and their goal is to silence us. And if we allow ourselves to be silenced, the enemy is won.
You're listening to the Bible Study. Ask the Pastor. Today is the first day of summer. Happened this morning here in our area just before 7 o'clock. So that probably means that there's some spiritual implications of with something somewhere. We're going to talk about that on the other side of the break. Stay with us.
Back in the day, a man became a pastor by moving to the seminary. Today, Concordia Seminary has 7 routes that lead to pastoral ministry. The Specific Ministry Pastor Program is a 4-year program where men become pastors through the World Wide Web while they continue to live and work in the congregations they are already serving. Keeping up with the times, that's Concordia Seminary.
Aw, some kind words from Sweden. Ing-Marie writes, I just send you a short email to let you know that I appreciate the morning show very much. I can't hear it live because I'm at work at that time, but I download all the programs from the website and listen later. Creation Club is a favorite, and Answers in Genesis website is now added as a favorite, too. Morning Show Players is also good. Keep up your good work, and may God bless you all at KFUO. Ing-Marie, you made my day. Thanks for listening in Sweden to KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels has been frequently mentioned as a potential presidential candidate in 2012. He's got a rock-solid reputation as being fiscally conservative and controlling government expenses in his state. But during a recent interview with the Weekly Standard, Governor Daniels said as president, he would have to call a truce on the so-called social issues. According to him, the plight of America's unborn babies would be put on hold until he dealt with economic issues. If Mr. Daniels isn't any good at multitasking, he has no business even considering a run for the White House. Every day, over 3,000 babies are killed in abortion chambers throughout the nation. I'd never consider a candidate who didn't understand the urgency of the abortion issue.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Unwelcome testimony. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. Police in the heavily Arab Detroit suburb of Dearborn, Michigan, say they arrested 4 Christian missionaries for alleged disorderly conduct at an Arab cultural festival. Police Chief Ron Haddad says his department made the arrests Friday. The 4, who are free on bond, insist they only spoke with people who wanted to speak with them. One of those arrested was Nabil Qureshi of Act 17 Apologetics Ministries. In a video posted on the ministry's website, Qureshi says,
"We were proclaiming love to Muslims. We were proclaiming the love of Jesus Christ. I was wearing a shirt that says, Jesus always loves you. And that was the message we were proclaiming, and we were waiting for people to approach us."
Christian proselytizing at Dearborn's Arab Festival has been a matter of dispute for several years now. Chief Ron Haddad told the Detroit Free Press he isn't taking sides, but police have to keep peace at a festival that draws 300,000 people over 3 days. I'm Steve Coleman.
Hi, this is Chuck Rathard, inviting you to join us for a live Bible study broadcast on the road on Wednesday, June 23rd, at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Columbia, Illinois. I'm hoping to meet many of our listeners from both South St. Louis County and Southern Illinois. Again, that's the 10 o'clock Bible study live from St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Columbia with Pastor Stephen Tice on Wednesday, June 23rd. And we'll enjoy lunch together after the program. We'll see you in Columbia.
It's fun for the whole family this summer at the Missouri History Museum, Lindell at DeBolivar in Forest Park. It's the Summer Family Fun Series. And it's free Tuesdays and Fridays through July 30th, 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. The series combines special performances, storytelling, and arts and crafts projects inspired by objects and themes in the exhibitions. Missouri History Museum online information can be found at mohistory.org.
Well, it turns out that our Jewish Christian pastor has been to Stonehenge, which is, that is a go-to place if you're a New Ager or
Neo-Pagan.
Neo-Pagan. Yeah, I thought there was a kind of an aura on you there as you came into the studio here on June 21st, which is the summer solstice.
Yes.
It's when the longest day of the year, when the Earth's North Pole is tilted as far as it can get in the direction of the sun. And you were just glowing.
I imagine that's the red
hair. Is that left over? That's not left over from Stonehenge?
I don't think so.
But you've been there.
I have. It's a pretty cool place.
And why do you say that? Bunch of rocks.
To think of what it took, the rocks at Stonehenge are huge. And just to stand there and give perspective to what it took, they were quarried apparently in Scotland.
Scotland!
And they were dragged all the way from Scotland down to the southern England in Stonehenge and set up like this. It's an incredible feat. What they were trying to achieve, I can't tell you. But I'll tell you what, it's a pretty cool place.
So when you went to Stonehenge, did you get
I think a it's little, aliens, frankly.
Did you get a little tape or something, with the Scottish man telling you how Stonehenge...
Oh, certainly you do. Yeah.
So what is Stonehenge?
Oh, it's a calendar. It's a sundial. It's a clock. It can be all kinds of things. I didn't really see anything untoward or supernatural while I was there. I'm looking at this picture you have on the screen about the pagans and the New Ages. They never let me get that close to the stones. But
they knew you were a Jewish Christian pastor, that's why.
But, I can't tell you about its pagan background, but I can say that it's a pretty cool place. If you get over there, you should go and visit.
So were you amazed? I mean, I'm never been to Stonehenge. I'm trying to put myself in your sandals here a little bit. Was there a feeling of awe that these ancient peoples, I guess, understood the movement of the heavens enough to create a calendar, a functioning calendar, so that they could, anticipate the seasons?
Not just that, but also the engineering marvel.
Well, I understand you're impressed by the engineering, but
the whole thing is amazing.
It's one thing to stack a bunch of big heavy rocks up when you don't have cranes and stuff. It's another thing to understand the movement of the planet and the stars and everything in order to create a calendar. You got to be pretty smart to do that, I think, don't you?
Yeah, certainly the Mayans did. I mean, we're going to find out in 2012 whether or not they have something going, but.
Or if somebody was just trying to sell some books. But anyway, the headline here says 20,000. Think about this.
That's a lot.
20,000 revelers see the sunrise over Stonehenge today here on the first day of summer. Story says, this is from Salisbury, England, thousands of New Agers and neo-pagans. What is a neo-pagan, by the way?
I'm not quite sure what that is.
Is there like an old pagan and now
New pagans.
They danced and whooped in delight today, as a bright early morning sun rose above the ancient stone circle Stonehenge, marking the summer solstice. About 20,000 people crowded the prehistoric site on Salisbury Plain in southern England to see the sunrise following an annual all-night party. Oh, there was an all-night party! I'm beginning to understand.
No wonder
this.
They were whooping in delight.
The event typically draws thousands of alternative-minded revelers to the monument as they wait for dawn at the Heel Stone, a pockmarked pillar just outside the circle proper, which aligns with the rising sun. You remember the Heel Stone?
I do.
What is an alternative-minded reveler in your mind?
Yeah, I'm thinking that's the guys that have crystals in their living room and get some kind of power from that. But, I think that, I mean, human beings always look for a good excuse for a party.
Absolutely.
Let's face it, that's what this is.
And it may not be a very admirable characteristic, but we all understand it.
Sure, we do.
So my question to you is this just an excuse to have a big party and maybe drop down a couple of British ales during the event, or is there something supernatural or spiritual going on?
I'm sure for some of these, quote, alternative-minded revelers that there is that's the whole neo-pagan, I think, approach to this, and New Agers. I mean, all of us are looking for answers, and I think these alternative-minded people are
what kind of answers?
Just not answers to life, answers to the
why am I here?
The first, the first level questions. Why
think,
am I here?
You think,
what is
people are really looking for answers?
I do. I don't think they all. It may not be conscious in many, but I think at night when we're staring at the ceiling at 2 o'clock in the morning and something is plaguing us, we're looking for answers. And alternative quote minded people have rejected the answers that that truth has given us in faith and in God and in those things, but we're still looking for answers. That's one of the challenges we have. I mean, I'm not sure you could caught me dead at Stonehenge this morning, unless maybe I had gospel tracts. I don't know. But, you know, these people are looking for answers like everybody else. They've rejected, which makes them, I guess, neo-pagans. They've rejected traditional answers to questions like Christianity. And they're looking for something that's alternative to what they see as the mainstream. I always think it's interesting that people still consider the Christian worldview as the mainstream when it really isn't. It is going so, it is swimming so against the mainstream these days that you'd think these alternative revelers would be interested in the Christian perspective.
It says, unlike previous recent years when the sunrise has been obscured by cloud, the bright sun bathed the monument in orange and gold on Monday. Here's a quote from Simon Banton. He says, one time in maybe 10, we get a decent sunrise. And, oh, that was a good one. He's a 45-year-old education volunteer for English Heritage, the body that manages the site. The story says, as the sun rose, a woman climbed a rock in the center circle and blew a horn, welcoming in the longest day of the year north of the equator. Drums, tambourines, and cheers reverberated in the background. It means a lot to us, being British and following our pagan roots, says Victoria Campbell, who watched on wearing a pair of white angel's wings and had a mass of multicolored flowers in her hair. This is San Francisco, isn't it?
Yeah.
The 29-year-old Londoner,
hey, Ashbury, yeah,
who works in the finance industry, also said that, quote, getting away from the city was a major draw.
It's probably the primary draw.
It is stunning, said Stuart Dyer, a 43-year-old National Health Service worker and dancer, on his first trip to the solstice celebration. To actually be able to dance among the stones, to be able to touch the stones, to be that close to such an ancient monument is unbelievable.
So, and again, that part I can relate to. It is an amazing monument. You know, I'd like to ask this young lady who works in the finance industry when she goes to work tomorrow, apart from a headache, what difference did today make in her life? But, it's a good excuse for a party. And there are probably some who are very sincere about worshiping the sun, or, you know, instead of worshiping the creator, worshiping the created, people do that all the time. I certainly, when I was in my crazy youth at some point in time, I was dabbling in Baha'i, and, you know, we were kind of new age.
Looking for answers?
Looking for answers, yeah, before anybody witnessed to me appropriately. And, you know, I think we're all looking for answers. It's just that some things that we find our answers in seem very unpalatable when we think about it, and I think these people need to be confronted with that. I mean, yeah, it's great to go and have a British ale and whoop and holler all night and have a big party when the sun comes up, but what difference does it make
in the Old Testament? Let's see, how do I want to come at this? In the Old Testament, when the people of God were commanded to take the Promised Land, and they did, one of the things that they failed to do in increasingly greater terms over the centuries was tear down
the pagan idols
and what the Old Testament refers to as the high places or the Asherah poles. Implying that Satan, in whatever it is that Satan does, influencing these people to worship these false gods, was active at these places.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the job of the leaders of Israel to tear these places down. Some of them, a minority of them did. Most of them didn't, to the point where eventually the 10 northern tribes just wiped out because they had lost their identity.
Well, and there wasn't even an implication on God's part. He wanted them to do that because he knew just how susceptible human beings were to Satan's wiles.
So I think it's one thing, as you did, to visit Stonehenge. I'd like to visit Stonehenge. I'd like to get close to the stones. I'd like to touch them. And
they wouldn't let me do that.
And take whatever experience I could from that. Just like, you know, I remember going to the Lincoln Memorial. It was an awesome thing. But in the mind of God, is Stonehenge a high place? If it is ordinarily not a high place, at least maybe not when you visited, was it a high place today when 20,000 people came out with flowers in their hair? And
well, as I said, I would venture to guess that a vast majority of those 20,000 revelers were there for the party. But there are going to be some who are going to be there for the spiritual awakening that they might feel because of such a thing. And for them, it is a high place. And it is on all of us. You know, I think in some sense we all are awed at mystery. And unfortunately, the man's inability to answer them, to give answers to some mysteries, are what's led to the fracture of the church and obviously the people moving away from the church in huge numbers these days. And this is a mystery that they want an answer to. Some people. I still would maintain that for the vast majority of people who are there, it's a party. It's a good time. You know, I remember dressing up and putting flowers in my hair and doing stupid things.
I'm having trouble picturing that,
yeah,
but that's
okay.
Yeah,
it is. I had pretty long hair at the time. But
if 20,000 people gather around a monument like this, which is pagan in its roots, and has some kind of perceptible connection to false gods, false deities, would you say that a Christian ought to be among the 20,000 handing out Jesus tracts on June 21st? Or would you say, not today, not while this is going on? You don't have any business being anywhere near that, just like the Old Testament people of Israel.
Yeah.
Didn't have any business...
It's a good question.
High places.
It's a good question. My gut says stay away on this day, partly because pragmatically these people are all stoned, so they're not going to listen to you anyway. Yeah, they're not going to listen to you anyway. And frankly, if we're going to be sharing the gospel, we've got to do it in an environment where people are actually able to listen. This doesn't strike me as a place where that could happen, but. And it's private land, and, you know, they probably couldn't get on there anyway. But I would say it's probably prudent to stay away on this day.
It says here the annual celebrations at Stonehenge are a modern twist on solstice celebrations, which were once a highlight of the pre-Christian calendar. They survive today largely in the form of bonfires, maypole dances, and courtship rituals. Now, I remember, I think...
Dancing around the maypole.
Seeing something in the Old Testament about don't pass your children through the fire, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the bonfires we're talking about here? Or?
I don't know what the heck a bonfire does in order to have a solstice celebration. Again, there were people who are... Where people gather together, it's like high school homecoming celebrations. You get a bunch of kids together, and they're going to build a bonfire. I'm not sure what the spiritual significance is. But the reality is that there's a lot of people who see spiritual significance in events like this. And so you have to ask these people. And, you know, hopefully this lady who goes back to work in her finance office tomorrow has a friend who can say, so, you know, it was a good time, but what did you get out of it? And able
to... Oh, man, it was great, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there any more than that? That sun came up. Man, it changed my life forever.
And how did it do that? That's the question.
It was just, man, it was just awesome.
Well, that's a good stereotype. But, you know, the only way we can do this is to be in relationship with people who actually are seeking... You know, I suspect, again, I say it again, most of these people, just partiers. But there are some who are really seeking some kind of spiritual significance out of this. And those are the people that we need to be in relationship with so that we can talk to them about their spiritual need. You know, the partiers, we can condemn them or join them and then repent later, I suppose. But there are people who are really seeking answers, and I think we all are at some point in our lives.
Now, Paul says in one place, I think it's in 1 Corinthians 8, something about, he was asked questions about eating meat sacrificed to idols. And he says something like, look, we know that there aren't any other gods. I mean, we know that. And we know that there are really no idols to sacrifice anything to. So
meat is meat.
Meat is meat, basically, he says. He goes on to say that if in eating meat sacrificed to idols that somehow trips up your brother, then he would never do that. But he's pretty clear that whatever it is that folks are doing is irrelevant, because whatever it is they believe to be true just simply isn't true. So if a minority of folks of the 20,000 at Stonehenge this morning when the sun rose over the monument believed that there was something supernatural there, and if they're not worshiping the God of the Bible, then they are
either for me or against me.
They're up to their knees, maybe their chins, in something else.
Right.
Those people who, as you said, are just looking for a good party, are they off the hook on this one? Just because, you know, maybe they're not asking any questions about life at this time, or just because they're looking for a little bit of ale and little dancing around the bonfire for fun. Are they off the hook on this one? Or?
Well, they're living, a hedonistic life in some sense, potentially. You know, I can't comment on the spiritual condition of the 20,000 people who are there. I don't know. Certainly, if there are Christians among them, they should be asking themselves some questions. But the world we hear the news at the break. It's an ugly place, and people need escape, and a lot of people find escape in stupid stuff like this. And hopefully they go back to their daily routines, and they have a headache, and they go on with their lives, and people are still reasonable and rational and can be shared with. But it does concern me for those who would find this, you know, the worship of the sun god or whatever it is, the energy Gaia. From the stones, Gaia, the earth,
creation.
The creation, exactly. We are always tempted to worship the created instead of the creator.
All right, so you're probably the exception rather than the rule. I detect, maybe not every day of the week, but on some days, there's something in Pastor Parviz that would look forward to taking some Christian tracks into the 20,000 revelers on June 21st in Stonehenge. What would you, if you got up early in the morning and made the trip out there, and the party is going on, it's been going on now for several hours because it's gone all night, and you take a deep breath and you pick up your materials, whatever it is, and you wade into the crowd, what would you be looking to do? Because what I just described is most people's worst nightmare.
Well, that's a nightmare for me too, frankly.
But you've done it.
I've done it. I mean, the reality is that it is frankly not very effective to be talking to people who are loaded, you know. And so, people who are drunk, it's like the St. Patrick's Day. You know, we're out during St. Patrick's Day in Dogtown. We get 20,000-30,000 people out there. Some are there for the parade.
You got some Irish people over there?
Oh, yeah. Before and during the parade, it's a good time to talk to people. But come about 2 o'clock in the afternoon when everybody is just drunk,
yeah,
you go in, you close your doors, you might have a Bailey's yourself, and you go and you pray and you leave. It's just not, it's counterproductive to be out there amongst the crowds of people
okay,
who are
so
just
let's,
so
let's
drunk.
Okay, so let's say that 2,000 of the 20,000 are not drunk.
Well, I would look for them, and I would, and we'd just talk to them. You know, what are you here for? What are you trying to get out of this? What is it that you are?
You walk up and you say, "Hi, I'm Pastor Kevin Parviz, Kaivi Shalom in Dogtown."
You just talk to them. You just ask them questions. So what are you doing?
Hey, what are you
here?
Doing here? Don't you know this here? Is a pagan ritual? You dumb.
I don't think you should be that aggressive, but I just think you look for people, and you know, you can, if you look at people in the eye, you can see the hollow, vacant expressions of people who are just sitting there. They don't even know why they're there.
So are you saying that as you hypothetically move around in the pre-dawn hour, as people are really starting to turn their attention toward the event, and as you, as you walk around, that you might have a sensitivity as to, I think this is a person I can talk to.
I think God sets that up a lot.
Do you?
Yeah, he does. In fact, I know he does. It's not a matter of thinking. I've experienced it. I don't know. You can sense the emptiness of people sometimes.
Let's take a quick call here before we run out of time on the hour. Hi, Rick. You're on the Bible study.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. And I guess you could turn it around the other way. When you get back into the office the next morning, what'd you get out of that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm assuming both of you gentlemen were in service this Sunday. What'd you get out of it?
I don't have enough time, Rick.
Yeah,
I got the forgiveness of my sins. I could start there.
Got the body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Right.
And
I preached a lousy sermon.
My daughter said,
I heard the law, but I'm not sure I heard the gospel. I was crushed by that, but I know it was in there somewhere.
I think it's a lot what we put in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we will get out of it. And unfortunately, there's too many Christians showing up to work Monday morning that you cannot tell the difference.
Yeah, that's true. What did you get out of church on Sunday? Well, I got nice brunch afterwards.
Yeah.
I will talk about it. Thanks for the call,
okay.
Rick.
Thank you, Rick.
Well, he's probably asked the best question of this last half hour, because here it is Monday, June 21st, the summer solstice. Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
Hey, we all look forward to the first day of summer because we enjoy summertime. But has anything lingered from yesterday in church? Probably most of us.
That's a great question. What did we get out of it? That's a question I think we should all ask ourselves on Monday morning. Thank you, Rick. You know, I have to confess, on Monday, what I'm thinking about is next Sunday. You know, I've got to start sermon prep all over again and worship planning. And
you have to ask yourself, would there be a benefit if we were to put as much energy and effort into the worship of the triune God as these 20,000.
Oh, can you imagine this happening? I mean, I suppose it does at youth gatherings. I mean, we get 20, 30,000 kids whooping it up over the gospel. That's a good thing.
Well, maybe they're mostly there for the party, too.
Well, who knows? I don't want to. Like I said, I'm not the judge. All I can do is ask the questions. But
so now that the sun has risen everywhere in the Western Hemisphere and that's over, I guess we'll look forward to the equinox in September or something.
Wow, that's the one I look forward to.
We'll have another party, I guess.
You said it was going to be 110 today in St. Louis. That
it's
not
feel
a pleasant
like
thought.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
So in the minute that remains here, are you encouraged or discouraged by what seems to be an emerging creation worshiping dynamic? We talked about Islam in the first half hour. Now we're talking about neo-paganism the next half hour. Are you encouraged or discouraged?
I don't think this is anything new. I think Solomon is right. There's nothing new under the sun. And this stuff has been going on the whole time. I think we hear more about it because of radio, television, the internet, all of those kinds of things. But the gospel still moves on, and I have to be encouraged about the gospel. You know, I have a feeling that Jesus is returning in my time. Everybody says that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we look at the world around us and we say, come, Lord Jesus. That's all I can say.
Pastor Parviz, thank you, sir.
Thank you. It's
Stay
good,
cool,
good
today.
Good to be with you. You bet. You too.
And that is our Ask the Pastor conversation here today, here with Pastor Kevin Parviz. He is pastor at Congregation Kyvie Shalom in Dogtown, where they apparently have some Irish people over there. I learned that today. Pastor Nabil Noor will be our guest next time here on the Bible study as we move into 2 Corinthians chapter 3. He is pastor at Redeemer Lutheran Church in Armour, South Dakota, another place where I bet it's pretty cool. Pastor Tim Ostermeyer. Oh, man, I forgot to get the piano tuned again. Oh, no, he's going to be so put out with me. He'll be our Ask the Pastor guest next time.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.